And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State news and athletics. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown. Feels good to be back behind this microphone again. We are recording here on Monday, September 28th, here in the afternoon. I am back here in, well, I not really beautiful Washington, D.C., because it's kind of rainy and gross outside, but Washington, D.C., in the SB Nation studios. You can follow our show, follow our website, rather, at LandGrant33 on Twitter or on Facebook. You should definitely like us. And you can follow me at MattSBN. I appreciate your emails, appreciate your tweets and support. We've had a couple of technical things here that we've had to work through to get the Hangout back and running again, but we're here now. And now that the Ohio State's non-conference part of the schedule is now behind us, it seems like we have a fair amount here to talk about. So to help us get kind of up to speed and help me get up to speed, because this was a really rare Ohio State game that I actually missed when it was live. I was on another reporting assignment for SB Nation. I had to kind of catch up with the tape here when I got back. So to help us all kind of get to speed on what happened, where we're going, what's going on, I have my friend and our fellow Land Grant contributor here, Colton, here with us. Colton, what's going on, buddy?
I'm doing well, Matt. I'm actually in a very beautiful part of the country right now, at least weather-wise, Boulder, Colorado. It's about 80 degrees here. It's been burning up. We've been setting record temperatures throughout the state for this month, so just getting before winter. It's great to be here. It's actually great to have Ohio State football back, given that they've been on a bye week since the Virginia Tech game. I don't know what was up with that, but Ohio State football finally back after a nice 38-12 win over Western Michigan.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I was covering the Virginia Tech East Carolina game. We can talk a little bit about where Virginia Tech is, since that's Ohio State's key win in a little bit. But I want to hear from you. It seems to me like that the big narrative from this game was Ohio State's offense finally improved a little bit. Maybe there's some stability here with the quarterback position, but maybe not the complete Death Star offense or Ohio State performance that was still expected. I don't think Ohio State covered for this game. From your vantage point, what do you think Ohio State did well, or what are the positive takeaways from the Western Michigan game for you?
I think the biggest positive takeaway is that they finally dominated a defense that they were expected to. You look at the Hawaii and Northern Illinois games, they averaged pretty much the same yards per play, 4.3 against Hawaii, 4.5 against Northern Illinois. Neither of those defenses are anything special, I think, especially you look at the Hawaii defense. That's not a good defense at all. Western Michigan was in the same vein, and they go out and they average 7.3 yards per play, and it wasn't 10 yards like it was against Virginia Tech. And like you said, we still haven't seen the Death Star of an offense that I think a lot of people were expecting, but they just finally put away a team that they were supposed to. Maybe they should have scored one or two more touchdowns. Cardale Jones missed some long throws, but I think finally the offense at least had some semblance of consistency. And even that was something we didn't see very much in the Virginia Tech game, because it was basically just four or five really big plays.
Yeah, that's true. That was something that I had kind of written about earlier. And if you're hitting on those explosive plays, people aren't really going to complain about the efficiency too much, because it doesn't really matter how you score 38, 42, 45 points when you're actually doing it. And it seems like here, not only did we see a return, to at least a little bit, not to the extent that we saw near the end of last season, but a little bit of Ohio State's efficiency, but there was some of that explosiveness as well. So when you add that in with another defensive touchdown, which Ohio State's now picked up in three consecutive games, you end up with a pretty comfortable margin.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk leading up to the game and even during the game from the announcers, especially at the start, about tempo and how fast Ohio State was going to go and how many plays they were going to run. But ultimately, it never really seemed like tempo was a huge deal. On the first touchdown drive, it was a three-play drive that took 49 seconds, but they only ran 70 plays in the game. That was only four more than they ran against NIU, and it was 13 less than they ran in the Hawaii game, so it wasn't like they totally switched it up with tempo and were running play after play after play. I think it just, more so like you said, felt a little bit more like the 2014 Ohio State offense that we haven't really seen that much yet this year.
Yeah, there is still time. If there's any consolation here, Ohio State's going to still, I believe, face three more not that great defenses over the next couple of weeks with Indiana and Maryland and Rutgers on deck before Penn State. At that point, any other Ohio State better figure out what they are and where they're going on offense, because then the sledding gets considerably tougher. But while I know that the struggles with the offensive line and that consistency and Ohio State's, you know, sort of offensive sluggishness in general have been the main stories here. One thing that I really wanted to mention is Ohio State's defense through these four games, with the possible exception of like one half against Virginia Tech, has been dominated. And, you know, you might look and an outsider might go, oh, okay, Western Michigan, you know, they're 1-3 right now. Now, MAC team, how good could they possibly be? We may not know as a team how good they are yet. I mean, their schedule so far has been murderous. But this is probably the best group of offensive skill talent that Ohio State's faced this year. Like, Western Michigan has multiple wide receivers who could be, you know, NFL caliber. They have a great group of five caliber quarterback, and they scored 12 points. And even though they're able to get some yardage there, they weren't able to really convert anything. And Ohio State has been able to do that now for really three and a half weeks here. What was your big takeaway from the Buckeye defense in this game?
I think, like you're saying, that they are dominant. Right now they're ranked second in the country in passing S&P+. They held Zach Terrell to only 18 of 33 for 169 yards. And you mentioned the receiving threats. Corey Davis and Daniel Braverman, yeah, they play for Western Michigan, but I agree with you. I don't know who else on the schedule right now for Ohio State presents a bigger threat in terms of two good receivers. Corey Davis is a kid that's going to get drafted. Braverman's a do-everything player, and we knew he was going to get his, and he ended up with 10 catches for 123 yards, one of which went for 55, where Ohio State kind of got caught into a bad matchup with Marshawn Lattimore, and kudos to Western Michigan for taking advantage of that. But other than that big play, they kind of shut down everything that Western Michigan wanted to do through the air. And Eli Apple had a tough day on Corey Davis with some of the back shoulder throws, but even then he was competing and making them tough. So I thought overall through the air it was a pretty good day again for the Ohio State defense.
The secondary really has been pretty electric. And I think it's just what we were conditioned to see from this Ohio State team, I think, at the beginning of the year, where I think fans might have been a little bit more willing to forgive some defensive lapses, given that, you know, maybe some depth in the defensive line was going to be a little bit of a concern. And there's still youth at some positions here, but they wanted a really high-flying offense. And Ohio State might still be winning games by 20, 25 points this year, but maybe they're going to be lower margins on both sides, and that might make people feel a little bit more concerned. But they're still wins. There's, in my opinion, I think that there is still reason for optimism on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe the learning curve for the wide receivers group is going to be a little bit steeper than maybe we anticipated. But the defense is already in championship form right now, and there's not a ton of offenses left on this schedule, at least for the next month, that I think are really worrisome, as long as Ohio State's not giving them short fields.
Absolutely, and you look at offenses like Penn State, how much of a threat are they going to pose, especially with their offensive line, even though they played a little bit better. But I do think that unequivocally, as good as the defense looked at the end of last season through the championship run, I think that so far this is going to be the best defense of the Urban Meyer era. You look at the yards per play in the four games this year, no team they faced has gone over 5 yards per play. They've kept two teams under 3 yards per play. So they've been, for all intents and purposes, for some of the lapses they've had, overall they've been spectacular.
So I want to talk about this schedule a little bit, which I know I think a lot of Ohio State fans are tired of hearing about already. It's something that's not going to go away this year. But here we are now. We're 4 weeks into the season. Ohio State was the unanimous AP preseason number one team and still has a very healthy grip on the number one spot in both the coaches and the AP poll. But you're starting to see a little bit of chatter, given that maybe Ohio State hasn't just obliterated people on offense and looked legit bad against Northern Illinois. NIU and Virginia Tech have struggled a little bit in their out-of-conference. NIU lost again. They probably should have won to Boston College, and Virginia Tech not only lost to ECU, but didn't really, I mean, I don't think it was as close as that 7-point margin. Do you think at this point, if you were an Associated Press voter, would you vote Ohio State number one? And if not, who would you put in that spot?
Honestly, I wouldn't. And I would put Ole Miss there because as of right now, other than maybe Utah's win over Oregon on Saturday, they have the best one going to Alabama. And frankly, for all the turnovers Alabama had, they throttled them. They took care of business. And I think the best part about this is that we as Ohio State fans are so conditioned to talking about the schedule, like you said, but we're four games in. They don't have to be one of the four best teams in the country right now. They certainly weren't one of the four best teams in the country through 4 weeks last season, and we see how it ended. So for all the talk about would they make the top four, oh, the schedule's so bad, how's the offensive line going to get better, they don't have to be in the committee's top four in early October because it doesn't matter. All they have to do is by the end of the conference championship games in December be in that top four.
Yeah, and we know that if Ohio State is undefeated, regardless of what's happening with the AP and coaches poll, they're going to be in that spot. Probably even if they lose only once, especially because, you know, I think it's not altogether impossible that the champion of certainly the Pac-12 and maybe another conference will have two losses. So that's you know, regardless of what's happening over this next month or two, if Ohio State takes business at the end of their schedule, which is definitely backloaded, I think they're going to be fine. I would agree. So I'm on the SB Nation playoff selection committee, which you know that will typically drops Mondays or Tuesdays. And I had to submit my ballot. I had Ohio State third. I have Ole Miss one, Notre Dame two, Ohio State, and then UCLA. Michigan State's in that conversation to me. Utah's in that conversation. A lot of people on Twitter and some other reporters that I respect were floating, you know, like, why shouldn't the Utes be number one? And while I think that they have probably the most dominant and best win, maybe even more than the Ole Miss Alabama game, because there wasn't any like sense that was a fluke or that, you know, one team screw ups did it in, like Utah just curb stomped Oregon at home, even though maybe Oregon isn't necessarily good. But that feels like an overreaction to me. Like, I've watched all the other Utah games this year, but maybe not a lot of other Ohio State fans have. And I didn't feel, I mean, like, I thought they were, you know, kind of tied Michigan. I mean, or not tied, but I don't think either team really dominated the other ones. And there wasn't anything in the rest of Utah's season that made me think, like, this is a top 15 team, let alone, like, a top five. But the season's young, and the Utes are going to have a lot of other opportunities to solidify their case as an elite team and one that's in that playoff conversation.
Especially in the Pac-12, you look at their schedule coming up. They have Cal, who's undefeated and has looked pretty good. I still have questions about that defense. Arizona State, the week after, who doesn't look like the playoff contender, I think a lot of people had them pegged for, but they also play USC, Arizona, and UCLA. So if Utah really wants to get into that conversation, they're going to get their chance. But I'm with you about how they've looked so far. The Oregon win was impressive, don't get me wrong, but the Fresno State game didn't do anything to tell me that Utah was one of the top 10 teams in the country. Utah State played them tough for most of that game, and like you said, the Michigan game was kind of a draw that flipped hands on that pick six in the second half.
You know, if that game had gone on for 10 more minutes, I think Michigan might have been able to win. Neither team was able to run the ball super well. It was a fun game, and I kind of view those teams right now as being kind of equal. And maybe that's a good thing, because Michigan is also certainly the talk of the college football world after you know, just obliterating BYU.
And for all the talk about Ohio State's schedule, which granted, Indiana, Maryland, Rutgers, those teams are awful. There's no way to get around that. And then Penn State,
Indiana might be average. I mean, they're undefeated. They're getting a vote in the coaches' poll. But I mean, I get your point. Rutgers and Maryland are trash.
Yeah, even without Indiana, there you just talk about Rutgers and Maryland, and that's going to hurt Ohio State if they don't blow those teams out. But like you said, the schedule is backloaded with Michigan State. If they keep winning, they're going to at least be in the top five. They may not be the second best team in the country, but they will be up there. And Michigan's schedule, after what they've gone through, I don't foresee them having more than a couple of losses there. So Ohio State, if they take care of business and then beat Michigan State and Michigan, I think all the talk about the schedule being weak is going to go out of the window after those two games.
Yeah, there's something that Bud Elliott, who's our recruiting, our head of SB Nation recruiting, and it runs our Florida State site, and something that he's said a lot when we're talking about schedule strength or conference strength, is that it really doesn't matter that much, like, how good your seventh best team is. Like, people on Twitter will make fun of you for it, but if you're able to get, like, you know, two or three quality wins, if there's, like, a good, strong upper echelon, then you're fine. And I'm starting to come around to that line of thinking as well. And, you know, Ohio State will have a chance to play against a really good Michigan State team. It looks like they're going to play against a really good, probably a really good Michigan team. And there are parts of other teams on that schedule that do things really well. Minnesota's schedule secondary is really good. Penn State's defensive line is really good. Indiana's running back is really good. Like, there's parts there. So I'm you know, it gives us something to pass the time when I'm arguing on Twitter here in the beginning of the day. But overall, I think Ohio State's going to be just fine in that department.
Yeah, and it depends on, I think, too, who comes out of the West, and that's the big wild card right now, is that there's so many teams. You know, Iowa's 4-0, Northwestern's 4-0, Illinois's 3-1, Wisconsin's 3-1, but how much do we really know about those teams? I think that at least one of those teams, probably Wisconsin, will, by the end of the season, kind of push themselves into that top 20, top 15 range, to where if it's Ohio State or Michigan State, whoever gets out of the East, that's going to be a very good win.
Yeah, yeah. So that you may be right there. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up here this week. There was some talk that I had participated in and tried to help fan the flames for, that Ohio State's road trip here to Bloomington, Indiana might get on College Game Day. And unfortunately, even though that would have been hilarious and great for the sport, great for the conference, great for television, ESPN wussed out. So that's not going to be the case. The Buckeyes are going to head to the surprisingly 4-0 Indiana Hoosiers. I don't think this was really expected, even though the schedule has not been super tough, especially since the Hoosiers are probably fortunate to beat Southern Illinois in the first week of the season. But they get a win over a good Western Kentucky team, and they hold on to beat Wake Forest on the road. They beat Florida International Airport, and now they are looking at a probable, or at least a possible bowl appearance. They can beat Rutgers. They, you know, win at Purdue at the end of the season, and you know, with Maryland, there's a chance to get 7 wins. How good do you think Indiana is, and what are you looking for in this matchup with Ohio State beyond just what Jordan Howard's able to do at running back?
Well, I think they're at least decent right now. F Plus has them ranked at 78. S&P Plus has them at a nice 69th in the country.
Nice,
and that is very nice. But I do think it's about Jordan Howard, because he's their main threat. And if there's one part of the Ohio State defense that has been lacking, or has at least shown cracks, it's in the middle, especially at defensive tackle. And they had a bit of struggles against Western Michigan on Saturday, giving up a few big runs and kind of getting gashed on second and shorts or third and shorts when they needed to get a stop. And if there's one running back on the schedule so far that's going to be able to take advantage of that, it's Jordan Howard. I don't know if he's like Tevin Coleman was last year, but he's very talented, and I think in that scheme, which prefers one cut and go, it could be something that gives the middle of Ohio State's defense a little bit of trouble come next Saturday.
Yeah, I would expect Indiana to be able to score, and that's been the case when they've played Ohio State the past couple of seasons here. And while Howard, I think, is certainly their best player, he's able to do a couple of different things throughout the field. I wouldn't sleep on Indiana's offense in total. Nate Sudfeld, when he's healthy, has shown to be a more than above average Big Ten quarterback. He's having himself a nice season right now. He's only thrown one pick over 4 games. He's completing over 60% of his passes. He's avoiding sacks. And the Indiana wide receiving core, which was really, I think, really struggled last season, given that, like, so many of them were underclassmen and that they had a pretty bad quarterback. Ricky Jones and Cobbs have grown a little bit. And I'm not sure necessarily it's quite as good as Western Michigan's, but if Ohio State sells out to stop Howard, I think that the Hoosiers are going to be able to find some ways here to score. So that's not going to be the issue. I can't see Indiana, you know, like, hanging up 38 points like they did a couple of years ago. But they should be able to get some points. The question to me is whether Ohio State's going to be able to effectively attack Indiana's defense, especially especially their I think their front seven, which there's some cause for concern there. And if there's, I know people have been you know, just begging for some more explosive Ezekiel Elliott plays. I have a hard time seeing how Indiana is going to be able to slow down Ohio State's offense enough unless the Buckeyes turn the ball over five times to make this into a real game.
Yeah, and maybe this is where Curtis Samuel comes into play as a running back. Later in the Western Michigan game on Saturday, he broke that 40-yard touchdown, made a guy miss, and for as awesome as Elliott is, I certainly don't believe he's as explosive as what Curtis Samuel brings. And even though he's the second leading receiver on the team, I do think we've reached the point in the season where if you're looking for that second back who's not only going to be able to spell Elliott a little bit, but also be able to give the offense that explosiveness that they've missed, I think Samuel's that guy, and maybe you look to him to have a big game beyond Ezekiel Elliott at the running back position.
Certainly possible. It wouldn't surprise me if Mike Weber is activated and potentially gets a couple of carries or sees some time on special teams here as well, since it looks like he is just about rehabilitated from his injury. I know Ohio State did not want to redshirt him heading into the season, and I think they'll take a look here at getting him some burn. Indiana's defense does a couple of things well-ish. Great at winning the field position battle, not very good at preventing explosive plays. That's what this Ohio State offense is built to do. They've had some kind of up and down success doing that this season, but I like them to be able to get back on that path a little bit more and get enough here. I haven't seen what the spread is exactly. I would imagine it's going to be probably close to 20, and that's a margin that I think Ohio State would be able to win. And what is not exactly the most intimidating road environment, and one that should have plenty of traveling visiting Ohio State fans.
Yeah, there certainly will be a lot of Ohio State fans, and we want to see the offensive line finally have that game. And even against Western Michigan, when they ran the ball a little bit better, it still seemed like the inside running that we saw last year was not non-existent, but just not where it's been in the past. And I think we are going to see more of those inside runs this week. Ohio State right now 104th in adjusted line yards. If you look at Indiana, who's 119th on the defensive line, maybe this is the game where it either finally comes together, or five games in, if the offense is still struggling to get a push, maybe then we do have a problem with the offensive line, and that's just the way it's going to be. But I think if they can't get a push inside against this defensive line, there's something really wrong.
Yeah, that's you're right. I would be surprised if you know, Ohio State still hasn't figured out a good solution here to odd man fronts or find a way to get that inside run game going. But it's not happening here. You're running out of places to do it, and you're giving a lot of looks on film of things where Ohio State has struggled to put other teams in a position to be successful against the Buckeyes. Real quick. Before we wrap up here, I did want to talk on the air a little bit about a conversation that we were having in our kind of newsroom this afternoon. I think things were a little bit slow here, and I don't want to spoil it. Why don't you tell the good listeners here what your kind of brainstorm idea was for Ohio State? Maybe this is something that you might explore in an article a little bit later on.
Yeah, well, I brought up a theoretical situation where Ohio State University, Gene Smith, the athletic department, they've had enough. They decide that they're tired of essentially lugging the conference on their backs for at least the last decade. I know Wisconsin has had their success. Michigan has been there in basketball and in football in fits and spurts. And you've had Michigan State in the last couple of years had their success. And we know how good they are in basketball. But overall, the Big Ten has pretty much been Ohio State at the forefront. And I messed around with the idea of the SEC or the Ohio State pulling an SEC and pulling a Texas A&M and going to the Southeastern Conference without Michigan, which I'm sure is just burning listeners' ears right now with my hot takes. But I think it would be something that wouldn't happen, but it would be very interesting to see how Ohio State fits within that conference, because I think we're much more alike those teams and those programs, and especially those fans, than a lot of fellow Buckeyes would like to admit.
So I am actually interested in this kind of brainstorm, you know, just as a thought exercise here on a couple of different levels. I completely agree with your last point that the fan base and even some things culturally with the Ohio State program are much closer to the SEC than fans would like to admit. In fact, I don't know there's a ton of programs outside of Clemson, Clemson kind of being the most obvious one here, that are more SEC-like for football that aren't actually in the SEC than Ohio State.
Without talking about the Noles, of course.
If we can avoid talking about the Noles, I would prefer to. And even there, like it's not a perfect one-to-one fit. That would definitely be in that conversation. So that is interesting. That would infuriate a lot of fans. But in terms of the relentless attention that's given to football, in terms of where some of the recruiting happens, in terms of the intensity that you want for coaching, in terms of kind of the pageantry that's around the sport itself, and that's importance. Those are all kind of SEC-ish. And I don't mean that necessarily pejoratively. I just mean like that's, you know, how people in Tennessee think about their football team too. And Luke and I have talked about this a little bit. Like I probably err a little bit more on the traditionalist side as far as Big Ten fans are concerned. In that I don't love additions to certainly not Rutgers in Maryland. I'm kind of a little bit conflicted. Traditional rivalries are important, and some of the off-the-field stuff of the Big Ten is important. But like in a hypothetical world where people that have been in Ohio State's conference for 100 years suddenly aren't, not all of those would upset me. Like if Ohio State never played Minnesota again in football, I don't think I would miss them that much. And it's just like, you know, I'm 28, and the number of really acutely memorable Minnesota-Ohio State football games that have happened in my lifetime, it's like two. Minnesota's won once in my lifetime. Like if Ohio State did not play Northwestern anymore, I think I would live. You know, Northwestern's won once in my lifetime too. Only a couple of them have been really interesting. I don't know if I would be on board with Ohio State joining the SEC though.
It would definitely be a change, and I think I'm on the other side of being non-traditionalist when it comes to that. But I think that the Big Ten made a huge mistake in the way that they shaped these divisions, at least if we're just going to stick to football, because adding in Maryland and Rutgers really did bring nothing. But then you bring in Nebraska as well, who was a hugely major prominent program, and Ohio State doesn't play them very often. Michigan doesn't play them very often. Michigan State doesn't play them very often. Penn State doesn't play them very often. So while you have Texas A&M going to Alabama every year, going to Ole Miss and playing LSU and having these marquee games as a big-time program, the Big Ten brings in another big-time program and they barely play any of the other power schools at all. And I think that that's another thing where the Big Ten kind of missed the boat when it came to bringing these teams in.
Yeah, that's going to be alleviated a little bit more next year when the league switches to a 9-game conference slate. But you're not wrong. It might have been a little bit better, as weird as this is to say, with Leaders and Legends, with all the stupid stuff here that came with that. There might have been a little bit more of those matchups. You know, like right now, I don't think Wisconsin plays like one of the top four big teams in the Big Ten East and has it now for the last two seasons in the regular season. One of my pet theories for the Big Ten, and this isn't something that's I think has really been endorsed by many other members of the media, but I think this could be alleviated a little bit if you swapped Michigan State with Purdue. If we're looking here that we're gonna make a bet that Michigan State's program stability is at a level where they're going to be good for the next several years. Even if D'Antonio leaves and Purdue probably isn't, you know, that way you're kind of evened out a little bit, because it seems like the four teams who are bringing in the most talent, they're all in the East, and there's probably an easier path for some, you know, for Maryland to join that section than there is for Iowa or Northwestern. That's just me. It seems a little bit mismatched here.
I think that would be a good solution, either them or Penn State, because a lot of the talk about the Big Ten East coming into the season, or at least after Jim Harbaugh was hired, was, well, the Big Ten East is set up to be another SEC West, and that might be the case in the long run. But you also look at the SEC East, and while it's been down recently, you still have at least two recently major programs in Georgia and Florida, But Tennessee, who seems to be on the come up, they just need to get a win to prove that they are. But they're still a huge program, and I don't think you can really say that in the Big Ten West beyond Wisconsin recently, because quite honestly, what has Nebraska won in recent memory?
Not much. They've been a consistent bottom of the top 25 team now for the past couple of years, and they're fun to play. I've enjoyed the Ohio State Nebraska games, but not a ton there. I think we might kind of experiment with not that we're advocating for this or saying this is likely to happen, but just as a thought experiment of what an Ohio State to the SEC might look like or how that would work. I can say that there would be big academic and prestige issues. Everybody in the Big Ten except for Nebraska is in the AAU. That's something that matters to university presidents. Something that even some fans take some pride in. That's not really the case in the SEC, where Ohio State would be one of the upper echelon academic institutions. And it may not be great for the rest of sports. I think it's pretty clear that Kentucky notwithstanding, the Big Ten's a better basketball conference. Ohio State has a great wrestling program. That's not really a thing in the SEC. They care about lacrosse. That's not really a thing in the SEC. They would just get their ass beat down mercilessly in baseball, where they haven't really been able to get success in not nearly as good conference. But maybe if it's so much better for football, maybe that doesn't matter. Like, the SEC network, if Ohio State was in there, I mean, that's $11 billion a year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not sure, to your point, if I could live in a world where a revised version of Paul Feinbaum's My Conference Can Beat Your Conference goes out on newsstands Ohio State fans are on the cover with it. I don't know if I could do that.
That alone might actually be the best argument for just kind of killing this entire thing here in the butt. It's like, not only do you have Buckeye Man and some of the other kind of like obnoxious super fans, then suddenly we have to claim Feinbaum as one of our own. That would be a tough thing to swallow.
Well, we're talking about joining the SEC. This is also something that I brought up in the newsroom that I don't think gained traction during conference realignment, but there were ideas that were thrown out there for the, what was it called, the Power Four, where it would be something like Ohio State, Texas, Michigan, Oklahoma, Penn State. That's another interesting kind of thought avenue to go down, to see those big teams. You had Notre Dame in there, maybe Clemson. I think that's just as interesting as well.
Yeah, once this grant of rights arrangement kind of expires here for the ACC, I'm sure that we're going to have a bunch of other realignment fever dreams, depending on what happens with the television industry, what happens with some other university presidents. It's funny, when I was in Greenville covering this ECU game, multiple fans wanted, and they weren't even that drunk. Like this is I think this is a thing here for East Carolina universe, laying out like a pathway for them to eventually join the SEC, maybe the ACC, but the SEC was the real target. So we can come up with a bunch of kind of realignment fever dream kind of things and channel our own kind of ridiculous West Virginia bloggers, and maybe those are things that might be better suited for the off season. Or the part of basketball season when Ohio State's playing a bunch of directional colleges in like North Dakota that we haven't heard of. For now, though, it's a kind of a fun thing to kind of percolate in the back of your head, because your first thought's probably the total revulsion, and obviously the Michigan situation here would be enough to scuttle that. But if you really think about it hard and are willing to kind of imagine a world where Iowa isn't a thing, maybe you can see some potential advantages to that. I don't know. I'm just talking.
In a world where Iowa isn't a thing, isn't that everybody's dream?
I mean, like, who? That's certainly Minnesota's dream. Certainly Iowa accountant's dream.
Jim Harbaugh throughout the summer talked about satellite cams, that being his America. Well, my America is an America without Iowa.
have you been to Iowa?
I have not been to Iowa.
I think Iowa's fine. Iowa may be a little bit annoying come presidential nomination time. I don't really have any beefs. I like Iowa's beat writers. Iowa's fans are a lot of fun. We have an awesome Iowa blog here on SB Nation. The only real like negative experience I've had in Iowa is that Kirk Ferentz was a jerk to me once at media days. But I can't really hold that against him, because that's kind of an uncomfortable event for Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah, I think too, when it comes to Iowa, not that many teams in the conference have bragging rights over Ohio State, but you look at their last couple of games they've played, those 09-10 games where Ohio State knocked them out of the Rose Bowl both times in spectacular fashion, the 06 game where they went on the road and just kind of beat the brakes off of Iowa. They haven't really done anything to us, so I don't know why I'm so negative on the thought of Iowa, but I think it does have to do something to Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah. Ohio State has lost to Iowa only once since 1992.
Well, and we can say right now that nothing real negative about Iowa, but just wait until old Bert comes back.
Oh, I can't wait. I've missed Bert so much. That feels like probably a pretty good place to wrap this up here. Now that Bert has blown another game and the FOIA requests are certainly flying around here in Fayetteville. Thanks so much for taking some time here to chat with me here about where Ohio State is, where they're going, where everything else is going here, and a world where Ohio State's a new run. Actually, let's end on this. Let's say Ohio State moves to the SEC. Who's Ohio State's new rival?
Like Florida.
Florida.
It has to be. With the history there, and it just seems like the fan bases will never, ever get along. What with the 06, 07 years in football and basketball, and then Urban Meyer coming over and winning a national championship. And then let's say Urban Meyer wins one more or even two more here. You're going to start to hear Ohio State fans claiming Urban Meyer as their own, for whatever that's worth. But I think there'll always be that connection between the two fan bases.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Feel like there's some real dislike with Alabama that goes beyond just the game last year. Those are two very culturally different places. Ohio State has been measuring themselves up to Alabama for the past couple of years. There's some resentment. I can see a clash there. Ohio State fans are going to infuriate just about everybody with a bunch of ill-timed Civil War remarks, which would happen at tailgates. I wouldn't sleep on Ohio State learning to secretly hate Tennessee. And I don't have a great take for this immediately. Like, it's not that far. There's some of the southeastern part of Ohio is secretly a little bit Tennessee-like. I could see some fights happening with some of those tailgates. Like, there's a lot of options here. Florida's a good one. Alabama's a good one. Call it a gut feeling. I could see that one blossoming into some good old-fashioned dislike too.
Yeah, Ohio State Tennessee sounds like it would be a really bad recipe whether the game were in Columbus or out in Knoxville. That sounds like something you would need to have a heavy police presence for.
Yeah, that absolutely. Well, Colton here, thank you so much here. Real quick, where can the good listeners find you and your work on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Dubsco, that's at D-U-B-S-C-O, and then you can find me on Twitter doing stuff at Land Grant 33, and also my work every Friday for I Got Five on It.
That's right, Colton, one of the voices here of the official Land Grant account. He's all over our site. Thank you, my friend. We appreciate your insights here. We'll have to chat again soon.
Absolutely, anytime. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, you bet. Real quick, everybody, you can follow Land Grant at Land Grant 33. We're at landgrantholyland.com. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We're on just about every other big social network. You can shoot me an email at matt.brown@sbnation.com. Be sure to check out some of the big college football stories that we have on our mothership, sbnation.com, including some here that are on Ohio State. And be sure to pay close attention here to what's going on here at the site. We got a couple of other big news stories and some interesting features that will be dropping later this week. In the meantime, thank you all for listening. Thank you for your patience. And go Bucks.